Welcome to the Vet Med Wellness and Leadership Podcast, where we discuss central challenges vet med leaders face, such as burnout, stress, and difficult interactions with clients and staff, just to name a few. In each episode, you will hear about actionable solutions that you can apply to your practice and invitations to connect with fellow leaders who are passionate about improving the wellness of the vet med profession. By subscribing, liking, commenting, or sharing this podcast, you are helping more veterinary professionals find the resources shared in these episodes. Thank you in advance for listening and supporting this show. I hope you enjoy it. Hey, everybody. Crystal Stokes here with my kitty cat, Hexie. And I am excited to introduce you all today to Christina Delgado. So she has been in veterinary medicine for longer than she cares to share. She is drip rate per minutes in, how do we say it?
Phalarabits.
I had not heard of this. Phalarabits old. So for those of you that have been in vet med for a long time, you'll know exactly what she means in her career. So she started in kennels like many of us, and she worked her way up. She's worked in shelters, GP, specialty, and ER, spending the majority of her career in emergency medicine. And in her spare time, she loves to spend time with her partner, Josh, and their three dogs. Is it Mila, right? Yeah. Woody and Jasper. And also, she is owned by her two blind cats, Espy and Ava. And she is constantly being judged by her bearded dragon, Lemmy. So you can tell we all love our pets here. She also enjoys hiking, the outdoors, cooking, crochet, and has over 80 houseplants, a number that she is always adding to. And today we are going to be talking about the magic recipe for management. She has so much experience in management and a really refreshing view on what it takes to have a team that is super engaged and thrives and is excited to do the work every day. Christina, I would love to start off with having you introduce yourself a little more fully.
Okay. Well, hello. Thank you for having me on here. I'm so excited. I started in shelter medicine. I've done general practice, all of the fun specialty ER, but now that I'm older and wiser and, well, you know, we can't be technicians forever. I'm focusing on management, and I have definitely decided that I don't want to be one of those managers that I've had in the past. And I think that we can start a trend with managers that are empowering and, you know, really, I know the buzz term servant leader is out there, but it is something that I truly believe in and I truly try to make sure is part of my everyday when I'm working with my teams.
So right there, I remember something I was attracted to when I met you was how some of your leadership style has been informed by what you've seen in the past. Like you've sat in most of the seats within a hospital and you know what it's felt like to be managed. And that has helped inform you of like, hey, well, what motivated me? What made me feel heard and empowered? And then learning along the way what you could do now that you're in a management position to really take care of those people that are part of your team. And I think that there are some people where servant leadership is really their natural style. Like it's just who they were before we even had the term servant leadership. That was their natural style. And I think it kind of flew under the radar for a long time. Because when we think the word leader, we imagine that archetype of like, I'm the boss leader and I'm going to direct everybody and I'm at the helm and I'm very visible. And it's all about, you know, taking charge. And servant leadership, I think, has a very different flavor and has become more visible in the recent years. So would you want to share a little bit more about, for those who may not have heard of servant leadership, what does it mean to you?
To me, it's just that my team and my people are the most important part of my day. They're the most important part of my job. Yes, I'm running hospitals. Yes, you know, there's metrics, there's financials, there's things that have to happen. But at the end of the day, if I am taking care of my people and they feel that they have that support, they have that person that they need, and they have that person that is going to be there for them and back them up, they're the ones that are going to take care of all that. So my main job, my number one priority is always going to be my people.
And just to give people the scope of what you do, how many hospitals are you currently managing? Is there a size that you want to share with us to give people an idea? Some managers that might be listening, they might have a small GP where it's, you know, 5 to 10 people, and others might be running multiple locations or have a large specialty hospital of like 40. Where are you in that?
I am actually a multi-site manager. So I run two practices currently. One of them, they're both around 20 to 25 people a piece. And then I also do hospital management development coaching for my entire division. So that's three states and around 33 hospitals.
Wow. So you're a coach as well.
Yes. So I do onboarding training and continual support for new and existing hospital managers. And then I also have been invited company-wide to do some of the onboarding workshops for all of the new managers across our company.
That sounds really exciting. So you get to have a really big impact. The ripple effects are pretty clear. Nice. So something else we had talked about is your point of view of celebrating the differences that all these people come in with unique skill sets and personalities and needs. And you had used this analogy of like the puzzle pieces, how we need all the puzzle pieces to fit together. I'd love to hear more about your take on that.
Everybody brings something to the table. Every single position in a hospital brings something to the table. So we can't have a business without our client service representatives. And they probably have the worst job in a hospital. I'm going to be absolutely honest. I don't know how they do it day in and day out. I've been a client service manager, so I've had to deal with just the people that were really upset, but I didn't have to deal with the ongoing onslaught of people all the time. Our kennel staff, you know, they don't have the most glamorous job in the world, but it is a huge impact if one of our kennel staff is not going to be there. They're kind of the backbone. They're the ones taking care of all of the animals. They're taking care of the laundry. They're taking care of the dishes. They're making sure everything is cleaned up and stocked and ready to go. So every single position, not just the doctors, not just the technicians, they're bringing something to the table that we need, that piece of the puzzle. We can't get to where we want to be without every single person.
Right. So again, we're talking today about this kind of magic recipe for management. So we've touched on two pieces already. One would be coming at it from a position of what we call servant leadership, which is really empowering each individual to be their best, to get what they need, to look at the differences amongst people and work that into the puzzle so that everything is useful and seen as a part of how this whole hospital operates well. I know you also talked about treating people. I love this, how you had a different spin on the expression we've all heard, which is treat people how you want to be treated, but you had a little bit of a contrarian view on this.
Yeah, I don't prescribe to that one. Mine is you need to treat people the way they need to be treated. So you need to deliver information to people in the way that they're going to receive it. Everybody receives information differently. Everybody needs to be informed differently. You know, I have associates that I just need the facts and I need to go. And then I have other ones that need a little bit more handholding, need to be helped, treated with kid gloves. I mean, we're all in this because we're caretakers. So there is a lot of sensitivities to some of the people in veterinary medicine. So some people need a little more of that support, sensitivity, softness. Some people don't. I'm one of those people that doesn't. If there's something wrong, I need to know what it is, how I'm going to fix it, what our outcomes are going to be, what our goals are going to be, and then I'm going to go for it. But not everybody's like that. So I think being a good leader, you learn how your people need to receive that information, how they do best in how you communicate with them.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more. There are a lot of these systems that you see used now when it comes to hiring and onboarding where we can test people. So there could be DISC or Predictive Index or Strengths Finders or whole assortment of different ways of helping us have a language for how we're different, how we're alike, and what we may need in terms of management style. And being attuned enough or aware enough to tailor your management to each person to get the best result. Because you said you're a direct type. I think I'm similar to you, where I can just take direct order, give me the bare bones facts, keep it short and sweet, and I'm on to do what I need to do. Whereas there are other types that may feel harsh or even overwhelming or too fast. They might need more information. They might need to have more engagement. They might need to have things spelled out more instruction. Some people are more collaborative. They want to do it together and have that kind of relationship, the team aspect. Some people are more individualistic. They want to go off on their own, let me just run with it. So there's so much there to unpack. I'm trying to put myself, as I listen to you, in the shoes of a practice manager. And you have this almost curse of knowledge where you know so much, it's maybe hard to go back and remember what it's like to be in the greener phases. But if you could go back to those early days, and let's pretend like I'm a practice manager with a hospital that is really struggling. So most of my staff are really burned out. We're short-staffed. I'm constantly trying to onboard or find more people, but there's a scarcity, there's a shortage right now. I'm having a hard time hiring. So I'm trying to just keep the wheels on the bus. I'm trying to help my team stay focused and just get the job done without burning out or having to take time off, sick time, PTO. And let's say in my heart of hearts, I really wish that I could make some changes, but I don't even really know where to start because I'm just trying to keep my budget in a line and keep the animals coming in and being served because we have a giant waiting list. Mm-hmm. And I just feel really overwhelmed. Do you have any suggestions for people? I meet so many practice managers in this position of being really overwhelmed and just needing some kind of traction or some tips on where to even start or how to think about this. Because I also want to say, you mentioned for you, it's about taking care of the team first. But I think there's a real struggle of saying, but what about the client? I have to make sure they're happy. And we got to get them in faster. Maybe just book a few more surgeries just to get it done so they're not waiting so long. But that might push my staff over the edge. And I feel like I'm trying to make everybody happy and then we're all losing. So I'll stop there. I know I gave you a lot to work with, but I'm very curious to see how you might coach a practice manager in a really tough position like that.
Well, and I think it boils back down to you still have to take care of your team. Because if you're not taking care of your team, they're not putting their best foot forward with the clients. So then the clients are not having that confidence in the team themselves. If you're not thinking of your team and you're like, we're going to have to, you know, with the budget the way it is, we're going to have to get, you know, X amount of surgeries, X amount of appointments, X amount of things back in. But if you've burnt your team out to the point where they can't handle that, then that's going to have a negative impact. That's going to have a negative impact on the team themselves because they're not going to trust that you have their best interest at heart. It's going to have a negative impact on your bottom line, on your business, because if your team is not engaged, if your team is burnt out, if they are struggling, that is going to come through on the client side, on the client facing side. And the clients are going to see that and they're going to say, well, you know, do I really trust that this clinic is the right place for my pet? Mm-hmm. But we have to make budget. We have to do this. We have to do that. In really investing that time and energy into your team and getting them to a point where they're not struggling, they're not feeling that burnout, that is going to come through on the client side as well. So then they're going to be encouraged. They're going to be excited. They're going to want to come to work. Even, you know, we've all experienced, as they say, the lean times. And I think that that's just kind of the norm in veterinary medicine. But sometimes, you know what, we might have to cut back a little bit, even though we have that budget, because if I burn these people out, then I'm going to lose somebody. I'm going to lose a great tech. I'm going to lose a great receptionist. I'm going to lose a great doctor. Well, where are you at that point in time? You're going to be even worse off than you were before. Mm-hmm. So I truly think that investing in our people and making sure that they are taken care of. And yes, there's going to be times where it's crazy and everybody is, you know, running around like chickens with their heads cut off and people are exhausted, but that's not going to be all the time. If you're really supporting your teams, if you're really putting those measures into place, that's not going to be a constant. That's going to be a one-off here and there. And your team's going to know that. And they also are going to know that you're going to support them through that.
What would that look like? So if I'm in a stage of business where it's chaos kind of every day, I think my team would say they generally feel pretty unsupported. And we all feel like we're in it together, that it's just the nature of the situation. It's kind of like we're on a ship in the middle of the ocean in a monsoon at night. Yeah. So where could we start? Do you have any foundational points? You'd say, look, these are the two or three foundational things. If you can get those going, that creates a foundation of support. Or maybe it's even just one thing. They would say, if you can nail that one thing, that will go a long way.
One is making sure that your team is cohesive, that they're working together. You know, is this an efficiency problem? Is it, you know, I got all these people in, everybody's doing their job, but there's no flow to it. You know, that is a huge part of some of the issues I've seen when I come into these hospitals is they have the right amount of people. They have, you know, the clients coming in, but it's just mass chaos every day. Why is that? Well, let's look at how they're running appointments. Let's look at how they're having, you know, in my hospitals, I'm very big on, you know, the cross training. So, okay, where can we set some efficiencies up where it's going to help, you know, take some burden off the techs or take some burden off the client service people and kind of move that around to do it as a team. So, you know, all of my technicians can make appointments. All of my technicians can check people out in the rooms. So we did that. We added credit cards in all of our exam rooms. So now, okay, we have less people clogging up the front and sitting there in front of the client service team. We can get them checked out. Everything's done in the room. Boom, they're off. Now we can bring those other people in. So I think a lot of it is just seeing how your workflow is going and your efficiencies.
Oh, do you have any more examples? That one is that's a great example right there. I've seen that so many times. The bottleneck that happens at the front, the phones are ringing off the hook. People are checking in. People are trying to check out. Everybody's like, ah, this is so frustrating. So cross-training was one of the solutions that you've found to helping with flow and efficiency. What else would you recommend in that department?
I mean, a big thing is just communication and making sure everybody's on the same page. So, you know, such and such is leaving from the kennel, but the kennel person's over here, and then they're yelling at the technicians. And then I think it's just a huge issue of workflow. And I think that that's the problem in so many places. You know, the cross training is a huge thing. So if your techs can do that, my receptionists all know how to hold. So let's say we have all of these tech appointments coming in. You know, I've got two techs in surgery, so they can't come out. You know, my kennel person's back in kennel because we have a ton of boarders and we have the bathing. And I have one technician who's like, okay, I have five nail trims right now. What do I do? So, okay, that's where you have that efficiency. One of my receptionists can go back there and hold. They're not going to be giving, you know, vaccines or drawing blood or anything like that, but they are cross-trained in the fact that they can come help do that. Mm-hmm. And just making sure culture is so huge. And everybody says that, you know, we have a great culture. We have a great culture. And it's like, okay, just laughing at work does not make a great culture. That's not how it is. Working as a team makes a great culture. You know, feeling that you are supported by not only your leadership, but also your fellow employees. That makes a great culture. Not, you know, having that backup makes a great culture. Not being inundated, like you said, you know, oh, we're going to add all these new appointments. We're going to add all of this. We're going to add all of that, but we're not going to add staff. You know, that can ruin a culture very quickly. And then my one thing is if you have a bad apple, if you have that one bad apple, you have a great team, but you have that one bad apple, they can totally take your practice down.
Yeah. You know, we call that in the psychology world is emotional contagion. Emotions are very contagious, positive and negative or neutral. So if you have this group that's like, we're doing it. We got this teamwork. And you have one person that's going, I hate being here. This is such a drag. This is never going to be better. You know, just whatever the negativity is.
It's not going to work. I don't know.
Yeah, I can really, the contagious factor, it's quite amazing, isn't it, to observe. And so from your point of view, in the management realm, your advice then is to, how would you deal with that if you have one bad apple on the team?
So, you know, everything's going to start through counseling. You know, let's have a conversation. Why is this happening? You know, is there something going on at home? Is there something, you know, is there something wrong? You know, is there a way that we can help support you to make you feel a little bit better about this? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if it's something that's just who they are and they could be the best tech in the world. And I've told a lot of managers this, you can have the best tech in the whole entire world, but if they're nasty, they're not, you know, playing well with others and they are starting to bring your entire team down, they're not worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The way I heard this put once that really landed for me, I'd never heard this perspective before, was if a person's not happy in your hospital, it may just be that it's just not the right fit. Mm-hmm. And so by releasing them to go find a better fit can also be the compassionate thing to do, to say, look, sometimes it's just the nature of the work. So, hey, if this is an ER, maybe this kind of chaotic, you know, unstructured environment is really just not working for this individual. And they would do really much better, more of a specialty hospital where like onco, where you have, you know, your appointments are booked, you know, what's going to happen. This is a chemo, this is how it's going to go. And that might be a much better environment for that individual. So by allowing them to move on to the next thing, to say, this is not a good fit here. And I wish you the best can also be helpful for that person.
And, you know, hey, maybe you're not happy here. Where do you think you would be happy? You know, can I help you find that happy place? You know, what is your passion? What are you really wanting to do? Because obviously it's, you know, it's obvious that it's not here. It's not what you're doing right now. So what is it? Mm-hmm. You know, and people who are great at what they do, I mean, and they, if they can thrive and be happy and love it somewhere else, I'm going to encourage that. I'm going to help them. I never understood the people who, you know, shut the door on somebody who left for a better opportunity or something that was more in line with what they needed for their family life or personal life or whatever. Mm-hmm. I never understood that. Like, why would I be mad at them for doing what makes them happy and what gives them, you know, gives them joy? You know, I love what I do. I absolutely adore what I do. I am happy. You know, I have bad days. Everybody has bad days. But in the overall scheme of things, I absolutely love what I do. So I want everybody to feel that way. And if it's not where they're at right now, okay, well, where is it going to be? Because I can't imagine being that miserable all the time. Mm-hmm. And I've been that miserable in jobs before. And I went, this is not, you know, I wake up every morning crying because I don't want to go to work. That's not, why would I do that? Why would I do that to myself? Because that's going to affect everything in your entire life when you're that unhappy somewhere.
Such a good point. And this reminds me of another thing you and I had talked about, which is how to, as a manager, really help your staff see their worth and their value and help them to feel empowered to just step into their role fully and contribute. Maybe you can speak to that. And you know, you mentioning too how much you love your work now, how this looks for you on a day-to-day basis, like how you engage people, how you show them their worth and value. How do you get these teams to work well together? I'd love to know a behind the scenes view as well.
Well, and it kind of on that, the lines of people who shut the door on people, I never understood the people who aren't teaching those people who are, I don't want to say below them, but under them as far as direct reports or things like that. Those people who keep their, this is my little role and I'm going to keep it guarded and I'm not going to let anybody else, you know how to do this. I want all of my people to be able to step into my role if I were to step out or, you know, have that next thing that they're going for. You know, I meet with my teams one-on-one. I try to do it. I'd love to do it once a month. And I'm going to be honest, that doesn't happen because of time constraints. But at least once a quarter. And what are our goals? Where do we want to be? How can I help support you to get there? Just supporting them and knowing, hey, this person is investing in me. I want them to know, even if it's no matter what company I work for, no matter what it is I'm doing, even if they're leaving the company that I work for, but they're trying to, I want people to know that they're invested in. When you feel invested in, when you feel that support, I mean, you shine. You absolutely shine. I feel, you know, I've been doing this for a really long time and, you know, I'm told that I'm pretty good at what I do. So, but hearing that from somebody who's also mentoring me feels, it's like, oh my goodness. You know, I'm like a little kid again that just got, you know, told you got an A and you did perfect. But it's like, wow, you know? And that makes me put more into my position. So if I can do that, if I can take that and do that with somebody else, you know, my kennel staff, where do you want to be? And they're like, well, you know, I really want to be a tech, but, and it's like, well, why can't you be? What can we do to get you there? You know, I have a wonderful, wonderful tech who, she started in kennel. She moved up to tech and I just see those leadership qualities in her. And so we started talking and I'm like, would you want to, you know, move into like a lead tech position? And she's like, well, I haven't been here that long. And I'm like, so, you know, like you're great at this. And it's gotten to the point where where she used to be like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. She'd be like, okay, this is what I'm thinking. You know, give me your feedback, but I want to go do it myself. Like just seeing that when you empower those associates, when you give them that knowledge, the tools they need to do their job, they shine. Mm-hmm. They absolutely shine and they want to do a better job. They want everything to succeed. That's where you get that. We're going to up the bottom line. Our clients are going to see that. If you go into a store and you see an associate that's like, oh, you know, ringing you up or, you know, here's your drinks or whatever, mm-hmm. total disengagement. They don't care. And I'm kind of like, you know, I don't know that I really want to come back here if I have, you know, a server that's not going to care about me or, you know, this cashier is always like this and it kind of brings me down. So I'm going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
You have those employees that are excited and passionate and empowered in their jobs. They are going to, that's going to be outward. So your clients are going to see that as well. And that's going to make their lives better. They're going to be happier. They're going to, you know, everything trickles down. Everything affects you, whether it's physically or mentally or emotionally. I'm in a much better place on all three of those things since I've become, I have a mentor that's wonderful. I have a job that I love. You know, everything kind of falls into place after that. And if I can do that for all of my people, I think we should all do that.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me, as we're bringing this to a close, if I had to zoom out and try to encapsulate your message, and I want you to add to this or correct it, I want to nail it. It sounds to me that your magic recipe for management is really about empowering and really taking care of your team first. That informs everything else. That if this bedrock of your staff feeling excited to come to work, engaged, supported, they know the path they're on, they know the goals they have, they understand the workflow and how they contribute and how they matter, how they all work together, pulling in the same direction, that will affect the bottom line. It'll affect how clients feel and view the hospital and how committed they are to remaining there as a client. You'll be more productive, less PTO, less burnout. All of this is centered on how you take care of your people. And maybe you can say it in a better way, or if you have any takeaways you want people listening today, especially other practice managers, to come out of this recording, you know, what do you think are the most important takeaways for them to leave here today with?
I think that numbers matter, but numbers should never matter more than your people. We have a responsibility to our associates, to mentor them, to lead them, to empower them, to take care of them, to support them. And that when we do that, we are going to bring out the best in them. Mm-hmm. And bringing out the best in them is the best thing you can do for your business.
Yes. And drop the mic.
And I'm out.
Everybody, going back to earlier, people are different. And to spend the time to know what an individual needs and how they need to be supported and to put the energy and time into making that happen for them. It's like slowing down to go fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't take a whole lot of time. You know, a one-on-one can be 15 minutes, but just that, hey, how are you doing? What can I do for you? What kind of support do you need? Mm-hmm. Oh, you found, you know, a CE that you want. Let's figure out how we can get you there. Mm-hmm. It goes a long way. It really goes a long way.
Yeah. And you have one thing I'll just pin on this too. I'll just add on top of what you just said, is make sure you as a manager have a system for following through. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I've seen some people that have the best intentions where they may do a great job of checking in with their staff. Like they're connected with their team, but then when the team asks for something or there's something that needs to be done, the to-do list is so long that things just fall off, or if they're not able to be acted upon immediately, and then it gets forgotten. And that can create a breach of trust where the employee feels like, oh, hey, I thought that we talked about this, but nothing happened. So having some style of a method of keeping track of everything that happens as you're managing people, and to let them know, to communicate if you can get that CE for them, or if mm-hmm. it's not possible right now, when to check back in, but having that real consistent communication that it's a circular, not just one direction, I think is mm-hmm. also something that's very helpful in making people feel supported.
Yeah. And having your staff involved in that. During our staff meetings, you know, here are the three biggest issues we're facing. How do you guys feel like we can fix this? What do you guys feel like is the best course of action here? I'm not down there in the trenches every day. I know this. If they need me, I'm there. Like, I can come do whatever I need to do. But they're the ones that are consistently doing this work every day. And they're going to know what's going to work, what's not going to work, what's going to be best. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes a couple of people have really great ideas. Okay, let's try this for a couple of weeks. Let's try this for a couple of weeks. We'll see what comes through. The best ideas I get are truly from my staff. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another piece of that puzzle is listening to them, listening to their ideas and implementing that. They know what they're talking about most of the time. Now, are there going to be things that you're like, hey, we have to do this, you know, this way? Yeah, you're going to have those. But the majority of the time, the efficiencies, the workflows, you know, those ideas are going to come from your staff and just being listening and saying, you know what, that's a really great idea. Mm-hmm. And having that platform where your staff can come to you with those ideas.
Yeah.
And knowing that, you know, if it's something that's not going to be possible, I'm going to flat out tell you, there's no way we're going to be able to do that. But the majority of the time, it's like, wow, why didn't I think of that? You know? So having them as part of that, I guess the procedure, the protocol, whatever, having them have that input has a huge impact as well.
So wonderful. Yes. If you're a part of the solution, then you feel committed to making it happen. It just gives that sense of we're all in this together. Our opinion matters. We're down here on the floor. We have to execute on whatever we decide to do anyway. So having them involved, it's just so important. You know, I don't know if you've ever read any of these books like Culture Code, and there are various books written on culture. So much what you say is what the experts are saying. This is stuff that's been tested and proven and evidence-based that it works really well in creating some of the best teams that we have. So I love that you bring this message today. And for those listening, if, say there's a practice manager out there that is struggling and would love to get some mentorship or coaching from you, would like to know more about these concepts and how you apply them in your hospital, what's the best way for people to find out more about you or reach you?
I'm on LinkedIn, which is, you know, the best place probably at this point in time, because I check that probably more than my personal email, you know, so LinkedIn would be a great time. They can message me and mail me whatever. I don't quite know how that works, but, you know, people are free to message me and start a conversation or ask what they need to ask. And I'm happy to help anybody who needs anything. Really, any other time you can ask most of the people that work with me.
All right. So you all heard it. That's her invitation. Yeah. I know for a fact that she is a good communicator on LinkedIn. That's how we met. And so I will put her LinkedIn profile in the show notes so everybody can find her. And I encourage you that if you are in a position of management and you do want some mentorship, reach out. Like, we are all in this together. We're all trying to elevate the veterinary profession together. And if there's somebody that's further along in the journey and they have some experiences that are proven to work, that are effective right now, given all the same things we're facing, which is staff shortages, burnout, more clients need to be seen than ever before. She's experiencing the same thing in her hospitals. So reach out and let's all do this together and support each other. So Christina, I appreciate you so much for what you do and the difference that you're making and for sharing this message with my audience today. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me today. I hope that you feel stoked after listening to this episode. And as always, I would love to hear your comments and feedback. Is there a topic that you want to know more about? Please let me know. And thank you again for subscribing and sharing your favorite episodes with others. It really means a lot.